Okay, welcome. My name is Divine. I'm a resident. This is episode 223 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in this podcast, the topic is, this is like an add-on podcast for the Pete's Shelf. You definitely should listen to this before the Pete's Shelf. It's just a podcast that focuses on some high-yield stuff related to newborns. And most of this, I'll introduce you with clinical vignettes and talk about like high yield associations and things that you're expected to know for yourself. And I'll try to be short and sweet with this. But again, this is an ultra high yield podcast for your pediatric shelf and also for step two CK, because stuff from the Pete's shelf is tested on the exam. And the thing is, this podcast actually has a slide deck. So just make sure you download it from the website, divineinterventionpodcast.com. So podcasts with an S at the end, .com. Okay, so let's just jump right into it. So the first question, right? So what is the high yield association, right? So the first question is like a newborn with a type 2 RTA, and they tell you that you find increased levels of multiple substances in the urine. And this child has like a right forearm that has a much smaller circumference than his right arm. If you see that, what are you thinking about on an MBNE? I really hope you're thinking about a Fanconi syndrome, right? So remember, Fanconi syndrome, those kids tend to have like a bunch of things going on, right? So they can have a type 2 RTA, right? So because the proximal convoluted tubules, most of the transporters don't work, right? So they can get a type 2 RTA kind of business. And remember, in that type 2 RTA, they'll have a normal anion gap metabolic acidosis, and the urine pH will be less than 5.5 because their alpha intercalated cells still work just fine. And then the right forearm being smaller than the right arm, it's usually because they have like an absent radius, right? So just remember thumb and radius abnormalities with Fanconi syndrome. Another disease you may find on an MBME exam, they may give you a question about a child that has like PTKI and like on physical exam and also has an absent radius. Or you want to think about a syndrome known as TAR syndrome. That's thrombocytopenia absent radius syndrome. That's a high yield thing to keep in mind for exams. Alternatively, they can give you a question about a child that has a hemangioma, right? Like a red raised lesion, like on the intergluteal folds. And then they tell you that this child has PTKI on physical exam. Then you want to think about something called the Cassabach-Merritt syndrome, right? It's basically just a hemangioma that sequesters platelets, so it can cause thrombocytopenia, so you may find PTKI on an exam. I know some of the stuff I'll say in this podcast, you'll be like, no, I don't know about this. Well, don't worry. Just take enough MBME exams and you'll see what I mean. Okay, so now remember that Fanconi syndrome is also associated with Café au lait spots, right? So remember, Café au lait spots are hyperpigmented macules. You can find them in Fanconi syndrome. You can find them in neurofibromatosis type 1. Contrast that with the hypopigmented macules of the skin that you find in kids with tuberous sclerosis, right? Those are your ash leaf spots. Okay, now the next question says, newborn with congenital neck lymphedema and edema of the hands and feet. This one's pretty easy. This is Turner syndrome, right? Remember that cystic hygroma, that webbing of the neck, it's actually an example of congenital lymphedema. So instead of writing cystic hygroma, which the MBME knows every human being has memorized, they may put congenital lymphedema as an answer. That's something you want to keep at the back of your mind. And remember Turner syndrome, right? Don't forget your cardiac associations, bicuspid aortic valve, right? And coarctation of the aorta. And then they also have like this renal association with horseshoe kidneys, where the inferior poles of the kidneys are fused and they are stuck under the inferior mesenteric artery, right? And then what if they give you a question about a newborn that has a suprapubic mass on exam, and the lower extremities, they tell you that, oh, you try to stimulate these lower extremities and the newborn doesn't move his feet. If you see that, I really hope you're thinking about some kind of neurotube defect. Remember, another buzzword for neurotube defects on exams is the term spinal dysraphism. Spinal dysraphism is the same thing as a neurotube defect, right? And the thing is, if you have a particularly bad neurotube defect, say, for example, like a lumbosacral myelomeningocele, that kid will have like paraplegia, right? So the lower extremities essentially will not work, right? And they can have like a urinary retention because they essentially have some kind of myelopathy, right? And remember, right, like again, a neurotube defect, you can prevent that by, you know, giving mom adequate amounts of folic acid, right? And don't forget that a lumbosacral myelomeningocele has a well-established MBME association with a Chiari 2 malformation, an Arnold Chiari 2 malformation. Contrast that with an Arnold Chiari 1 malformation that has an association with syringomyelia. So that's something very high yield you want to keep at the back of your mind on exams. And then overlapping, the next question says overlapping digits, rocker bottom feet, the child dies 10 days after birth. This one's pretty easy. This is trisomy 18, right? This is Edwards syndrome, right? So remember, they tend to have overlapping digits, rocker bottom feet. These children tend to not live very long, right? And remember, if you do a quad screen, the alpha fetal protein, the estriol, and the beta HCG will be decreased in those kids. That's something high yield to know. And then the inhibin A is kind of like up in the air, but it's usually normal on MBMEs. Contrast that with Down syndrome, where the beta HCG and the inhibin will be increased, but the other things will be decreased, right? So that those are high yield quad screen results you want to know for your exam. And I know some of you can be saying, okay, Divine, how do I differentiate trisomy 18, which is Edwards syndrome, from trisomy 13, which is Bartholin syndrome? The way you do that on an MBME is essentially, they may have rocker bottom feet, but they will tell you that the kid has like cleft lip, cleft palate. If you see that, think more about Bartholin syndrome, which is trisomy 13. Okay, so the next question just talks about Bosworth pathophysiology. So this is one way your friends at the MBME kind of integrate embryology with the Pete's shelf and step 2 CK. So these are things you sort of kind of want to know, right? So, for example, if they give you a question about a newborn with scrotal swelling, and they tell you that, oh, that this finding transilluminates with a pen light. This one's pretty easy. You want to be thinking about like a hydrocele, right? So a hydrocele is where you have like, failed closure, right? Like there's still like patency of the tunica vaginalis, right? And one, I guess I didn't throw in here, but if you see a newborn, you know, with like big scrotum, and although usually they make this more of like a bigger person, like a person in his 20s, 30s, having marital problems because they're not able to have kids. And then they tell you that you have like this bag of worm sensation in the scrotum, right? You want to think about a varicocele, right? That usually arises from problems with the development of the pampiniform plexus, right? So that's something you want to keep in mind. And then if they give you a question about like a midline neck mass that moves with swallowing, I'll say that again, midline neck mass that moves with swallowing. If you see that, you absolutely want to think about a thyroglossal duct cyst, right? So remember, thyroglossal duct cyst, it will arise where you have failed obliteration of the thyroglossal duct. It's a midline mass and it moves with swallowing. That's very high yield, right? It moves with swallowing, right? Remember, the thyroglossal duct develops from the base of the tongue, the foramen cecum, right? Okay, now the next one, neck mass lateral to the midline does not move with swallowing. Again, this one should be pretty easy. This is just a very simple brachial cleft cyst, right? So again, it's lateral to the midline and it does not move with swallowing, right? If you see this, again, think about a brachial cleft cyst. It's a problem with ectodermal development versus a thyroglossal duct cyst that's a problem with endodermal development, right? It's like an endoderm-derived structure, right? So lateral to the midline does not move with swallowing. Think about a brachial cleft cyst. It basically arises because you have problems with the field obliteration of the second, third, and fourth brachial clefts. Remember, those brachial clefts are derived from ectodermal structures. And now that I'm just going over this, some idea just jumped in my mind. If they give you a question about a newborn has a calcified supracellar mass, right? You want to think about a craniopharyngioma, right? Sometimes you may see it referred to as an adamantinomatous craniopharyngioma. Remember, that arises from oral ectoderm. Sometimes they may call it like Rathke's pouch on an MBME exam. And then what if they give you a question about a newborn that has trouble turning his head to the other side, and they tell you that this newborn's head is tilted? If you see this, you want to think about like congenital torticollis, right? Usually it happens from like problems with the sternocleidomastoid muscle. That's the buzzword you want to remember. Like they may have like shortening or like fibrosis of the sternocleidomastoid muscle because maybe the child kind of tilted his head funny and weird in the uterus, right? So that's just something you want to keep in mind. And then what if they give you a question about a newborn with a scaphoid abdomen and respiratory distress? And then they tell you that they have a nasogastric tube. It's completely inserted, you know, so it doesn't like stop as you'll see in esophageal atresia or the T fistula. But, you know, it goes all the way in. But then they check on imaging and they find that it's just in the thoracic cavity. If you see that, you want to think about a diaphragmatic hernia, right? So the scaphoid abdomen is because the abdominal contents are in the thoracic cavity. Right. And remember, the Bosworth pathophysiology you want to remember there is because there is like failed development or normal development of the pleural peritoneal membrane. I mean, the Bosworth kind of makes sense. Pleural peritoneal membrane. It's a membrane that divides the pleural cavity up high from the peritoneal cavity down low. Right. So failed development of the pleural peritoneal membrane. That's very high yield to know for exams. And then the next slide, right? So they give you a question about a newborn male. He has no masses felt in the scrotum. What is the child at increased risk of in the future? Well, this one's pretty easy, right? This is cryptorchidism, right? If those things don't descend by 12 months, right, there's an increased risk of like testicular cancer. Even if it descends before 12 months, there's still an elevated risk compared to the normal child for testicular cancer, right? And then the next question says, what's the kind of lung disease, restrictive or obstructive, in a newborn with a palpable depression in the anterior chest wall on exam? Right. If you see this, and let's say it's like in the middle, like middle anterior chest wall, you want to think about like pectus excavatum, right? Remember, it's like if you excavate the earth, right, you form a depression in the earth. So pectus excavatum has a very strong association with restrictive lung disease because the person's lungs may not expand, right? So this would be an example of restrictive lung disease, right? So they will have decreased lung volumes. FEV1 to FVC would be normal or increased, right? But the DLC will be normal because there's nothing intrinsically wrong with the lungs. There's just something anatomically wrong with the surroundings of the lungs, right? So the DLC will be normal under these circumstances. So this will be restrictive disease. Now, what if they give you a question about a newborn male with an asymmetric chest wall and they tell you that, oh, his right chest wall appears depressed compared to the left side. And they tell you that, oh, imaging is notable for the absence of multiple ribs. If you see this, you want to think about something called Poland syndrome. Essentially, they will have like non-development or poor development of the pectoralis muscles, right? And there are some other associations you may want to know in your test with this, right? They tend to have like webbed fingers, they may have like poorly developed ribs, or they may actually be missing some ribs, right? And they may have like no axillary hair and stuff like that. If you see that, you absolutely want to think about Poland syndrome on an MDM exam. Again, it's just one of those things. I know you may be saying, oh, Divine, this is super low yield. I promise you it is not. Okay, now what if they give you a question about a newborn with pale blue extremities and they say, what's the next best step in management? Just warm this child, reassure the parents. This is acrocyanosis, right? Basically, if you see peripheral cyanosis, that's fine. It's just because newborns have like a lot of problem with like regulating like their vascular tone to conserve and release heat, right? So they have like vasomotor instability, right? So this is acrocyanosis. That's absolutely fine. But remember, this gets a 1 on the Apgar scale. Now, the next one just says diagnosis association is just a picture. I got the image from Wikipedia. You essentially see like another nipple on this picture. This is something known as a supernumerary nipple. This one is just something you want to be able to recognize on a test because there's this famous thing called the milk line that runs from the like the breast area right to the groin, right? So you can actually develop nipples along that region. It's benign for the most part. It doesn't cause many things. It's just probably more of a cosmetic problem to people that have it. Okay, now the next one, right? So an African-American newborn with a dark hyperpigmented macule over the intergluteal folds. This is something that's known as a Mongolian spot. They may try to trick you into choosing child abuse on your test. Don't do that. It's benign, doesn't do anything. Just again, dark hyperpigmented macule, and you'll be in an African-American kid on an exam. Now, red rays lesion over the neck or face in a newborn. What's your next best step in management? Again, this is a do not touch lesion. Just reassure the parents. This is a strawberry or a capillary hemangioma. Although if it involves the eye or the airway, you may need to intervene surgically. But for the most part, it's benign. It will resolve, right? So they may give you an MDME question and say, what is the most likely outcome? It will resolve on its own before the child is usually by the age of 5 or 6 years, it's not a huge deal, right? And then what if they give you a question about a newborn with a white reflex on a fundoscopic exam? If you see that, right, that's retinoblastoma, right? That's retinoblastoma. Remember, these kids tend to be at increased risk of osteosarcoma in the future, right? Remember, it arises from an RB tumor suppressor gene mutation, right? So you have like, even if you have genetic mutations, you keep going from the G1 to the S phase willy-nilly. Right. And remember, white reflex, though, with like hepatosplenomegaly on exams, you know, you may want to think about cataracts from like one of those galactose problems, like essential galactosemia, for example. Remember, those kids, right, they tend to one of the most common causes of death is like E. coli sepsis. Right. They'll have hepatomegaly. Remember, the galactosemia, you typically have it from a deficiency of UDP. From galactose 1-phosphate uridyl transferase. Right. So, again, just something you want to keep in mind on a test. And then, what if they give you a question about a newborn with central cyanosis at birth, and they tell you that when the kid cries, the cyanosis disappears? If you see this, you want to think about choanal atresia, right? Essentially, your next step in management on a test is to try to pass a nasogastric tube through the nose. And then you'll notice that, man, I'm not able to advance this NG tube. If you see that that's coronal atresia, don't forget the charge association, right? So they may ask you a question and say, which of the following is a likely other finding on physical exam? If you see that, again, you know, you want to think about the other things, right? Like coloboma, that's like a keyhole defect in the iris. The H is like heart. They may have like heart problems. The A is for like atresia coeni, right? Those kids, right, when they cry, they pink up because they open their mouths and they breathe through their mouths, right? But, you know, they're kind of cyanotic when they're not crying because they're using their nose. And then the R is like renal problems, and the G is for like GU anomalies, and then the E is for ear problems, right? So, you know, kind of keep those things in the back of your mind for exams. And then what if they give you a question about a newborn with a large tongue and hypoglycemic seizures and a right upper quadrant mass on exam? If you see this, you want to think about something called a Beckwith-Wiedemann syndrome, right? So it's an overgrowth disorder, right? So they tend to have macroglossia on physical exam, right? And then because they have like overgrowth of many things, right? They may have like hyperplasia of their pancreatic islet beta cells. And if those beta cells undergo hyperplasia, they'll produce a crap ton of insulin, and then they can get hypoglycemia and have seizures as newborns. Remember, hypoglycemic seizures in a newborn, you can also find that in an infant of a diabetic mom, because that infant is seeing all this glucose from mom, right? Sees all this glucose from mom in utero. So, you know, the intestinal pancreatic islet beta cells, they undergo hyperplasia as well. So they'll keep producing a crap ton of insulin. It's not like they just shrink the moment the newborn is born, right? That doesn't happen that way, right? So they may have like hypoglycemic seizures. Although remember, hypocalcemia is another thing that can cause seizures in an infant of a diabetic mom on an exam. And also hypocalcemic seizures may be something you'll find with DeGeorge syndrome, right? Remember catch 22, like 22q11 are problems on MBM exams. And then remember the right upper quadrant mass, right, is a hepatoblastoma. Again, it tends to be found in Beckwith-Wiedemann syndrome. Remember, Beckwith-Wiedemann syndrome also has an association with Wilms tumors on tests, right? And remember, they may also have hemihypertrophy, right? So like one side of the body is bigger than the other. And then the add-on question there is like, oh, newborn with a large tongue and umbilical hernia. Just think about like hypothyroidism in this kid. Remember, the most common cause of hypothyroidism in a newborn is a thyroid dysgenesis, right? And then what if they give you a question? So the next one, right? Newborn that has not pooped in the first 48 hours of life. This one's pretty easy. That's meconium ileus. It can be caused by one of two things, right? So it can be from Hirschsprung disease, right? Like a kid with Down syndrome, or it can be from cystic fibrosis, right? And then calcified abdominal mass that crosses the midline in a newborn. This is neuroblastoma, right? It's neuroblastoma. Remember, they can, if you see it, it crosses the midline and it's calcified. And if you saw it in the mediastinum, right, it shows up in the posterior mediastinum because it's a neuro-based tumor. And remember the association with something called opsoclonus myoclonus syndrome, right? So those kids will have like weird movements of the eyes and weird movements of the extremities on an exam. And then what if they give you a question about a non-calcified abdominal mass that does not cross the midline? If you see this, right, that's Wilms tumor. That's pretty easy. And then they tell you next question, like urethral meatus on the ventral surface of the penis. That's actually a hypospadia, right? So if you hold out if a person has an erect penis, like the under surface, if you see like the urethral meatus, instead of coming out at the tip, comes out at the bottom, that's a hypospadia. If it comes out at the top, which is the dorsal surface, that's an epispadia. The epispadia actually tends to be worse. It tends to be associated with a congenital problem known as a bladder extrophy. Okay, so that's something to keep in mind. And then what will a biopsy of a benign rash on the trunk and extremities in a newborn? And they tell you that, oh, this rash spares the palms and soles. If you see this, it's usually like a macular rash. This is ETN, right? So erythema toxicum and neonatorum. It's benign, but if you do a biopsy, you'll find eosinophils. This is one of those weird, bizarre things that your friends at the MBME kind of expect you to know for exams. And then what if they give you a question about a newborn with seizures? And this newborn has intracranial calcifications on imaging and a port wine stain on the forehead. If you see this, this is a Sturge-Weber syndrome. Sometimes they call it like nevus flammeus, like F-L-A-M-M-E-U-S on a test. It's just something you want to keep at the back of your mind. They tend to have like problems in a trigeminal nerve distribution, usually like trigeminal nerve V1, right? So the ophthalmic nerve. And then Bosworth pathophysiology, so the seventh question here. So newborn with bilious vomiting, you cannot interpret the image the MBME gives you. This is going to be my rotation with mid-gut volvulus. You will essentially see the Bosworth pathophysiology here is you have like weird rotation of the mid-gut, of the gut around the superior mesenteric artery. And then what if they give you a question about a newborn with bilious vomiting and you see a double bubble sign on imaging? This is duodenal atresia, right? Remember, it's associated with Down syndrome. And then a newborn, and the problem is the Boswell pathophysiology is a failure of recanalization. Okay, it's a failure of recanalization. That's something to commit to memory on exams. And then what if they give you another question about a newborn with bilious vomiting, triple bubble sign on imaging? This is jejunal atresia. And the Boswell pathophysiology here is actually a vascular insult in utero. Okay, it does not arise from a failure of recanalization. I promise you, this is floridly high yield to know for exams. And then they tell you, oh, newborn has not pooped in the first 48 hours of life. He's noted to have endocardial cushion defects on echocardiography. This is clearly Hirschsprung's disease. Essentially, the thing that's happening to this kid is they have like failed migration of neural crest cells, okay? So the myenteric and the Meissner's plexi do not develop, right? So like the Auerbach's plexus, Meissner's plexus, so the myenteric and the submucosal plexa. The myenteric plexus is Auerbach's plexus. The submucosal plexus is Meissner's plexus, okay? So they do not develop, so this kid has problems there. And then urine coming out of a newborn zombilicus, right? This is from a patent urethrus. This one's pretty easy. Essentially, right, the urethrus connects the bladder to the umbilicus in utero. It's supposed to obliterate. If it does not obliterate and it stays patent, then you'll see urine coming out from the umbilicus of a newborn. And then the last slide, second to the last slide, whoops, sorry. So triggers, right? So newborn with respiratory difficulty. On exam, he's noted to have a small chin and his tongue is displaced downwards. This is the Pierre-Robin sequence. Pierre, like, I think it's P-I-E-R-R-E. And then Robin is like R-O-B-I-N sequence. It's just something you want to recognize. These kids may have respiratory difficulty because essentially the tongue is obstructing the airway. And then a newborn with lower extremity cyanosis and pink upper extremities. There's a radiofemoral pulse delay on physical exam. This is coarctation of the aorta, right? So they may have like well-developed upper extremities, poorly developed lower extremities, or they may have like, like pretty good pulses in the upper extremities, and then the femoral pulses are barely palpable. This is coarctation of the aorta. Remember, it has an association with a Turner syndrome, right? And you remember, classically, you'll find the three sign. You'd find the three sign, okay, on imaging. You'd find the three sign on imaging. And then the radiofemoral pulse delay again, because usually when you palpate the femoral pulse, the radial pulse, you should be able to palpate the femoral pulse at roughly the same time. If there is a delay in those things, think about coarctation of the aorta and you fix it with surgery. Drugs are not going to do squat for that child. And then newborn with bounding pulses and a white pulse pressure on exam. You want to think more about like a patent ductus arteriosus. Remember that has an association with like a congenital rubella syndrome. So they may have like bounding femoral pulses. If you see that, kind of think about a PDA on a test. And then a newborn with one umbilical artery and one umbilical vein, because normally, right, you should have two umbilical arteries and one umbilical vein. If you see this, you want to think about like problems with like the kidneys, right? It tends to be associated with like renal abnormalities on MBME exams. And then the final slide, this versus that, right? So caput succedaneum versus cephalohematoma. A caput succedaneum, the big thing you just want to keep at the back of your mind is so this one, it's pretty easy. Essentially, the thing that happens with caput succedaneum is that you have like just like edema from kind of like the child's head being all banged up as the child was being delivered. For the most part, it's benign. It's going to resolve within a few days. It's not anything you need to be like super, super worried about in the kid. And remember, it's the lesion tends to cross suture lines, right? So it tends to cross suture lines. That's just one of those weird things you want to keep at the back of your mind. It crosses, it's like basically it's just edema and swelling of the child's head and it crosses suture lines versus a cephalohematoma that's a subperiosteal hemorrhage. You need to memorize that buzzword, okay? And it tends to be confined to the suture line. So it does not cross suture lines, right? And then the last thing I think I want to explain here, and again, my apologies that I'm rushing so much. I have like a meeting that I'm literally already late for, but I just want to get this podcast out of the way. The thing I guess I want to gastroschisis versus omphalocele. So it's high yield to know that gastroschisis tends to be to the right of midline. Okay, to the right of midline, it tends to not be covered by any like membranes, right? And there's like a high risk of like bowel ischemia because you have like essentially like peritoneal cavity and bowel just filled out with amniotic fluid. And there's a lot of problems that can arise with that. And it tends to be not associated with many other bad things, right? Contrast that with an omphalocele cell that is in the midline, so it's like coming out right through the umbilicus, and it tends to be covered over by a membrane. So you may be like, oh, this is better. It's not, because it tends to be associated with like many other things like congenital heart problems and all this badness, right? So that's just something you want to keep at the back of your mind. And as I do at the end of every session, I do offer one-on-one tutoring for many exams, right? So step one, 2CK, 2CS, step three, preclinical med school exams, third year shelf exams. If you're a medicine resident, I tutor for like the ABIM boards and the in-training exam. Same thing for PEDS residents if you're interested in that. And then I also offer these booster courses for all the USMLE exams. It's 20 hours for each of the USMLE exams. Again, I've done it with tons of people. They found it to be like extremely useful. And then I also do like consulting if you're like a med student applying to residency, so like an ERASAP, or a college student applying to med school, so like an AMCASAP. I do offer like one-on-one like coaching or advising, you know, like personal statement editing, rec letters. I did your application. I do mock interviews. Again, I've worked with people from multiple specialties. And with this current cycle, all the people I worked with matched, right? So if that's something you're interested in, just reach out to me either through the website or you send me an email at divineinterventionpodcasts with an S at the end at gmail.com. And please subscribe to the YouTube channel, the podcast. I have the podcast on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, on Google Play. So please subscribe. And then please don't forget to also subscribe to the WordPress website. And then if you have like a college student buddy that needs tutoring for like any of the pre-med subjects, Gen Chem, O Chem, Physics, Biochem, Histology, Physiology, I offer tutoring for all those things. So thank you for listening. Please listen to this podcast before you take your PEDS shelf and before you take Step 2 CK. This stuff is floridly high yield. So have a wonderful rest of your day. Please do not panic. Whatever is going on in the world will pass. Right? This too shall pass. That should be your motto. So have a wonderful rest of your day. Make the most of the opportunity that has been presented to you. I'll see you next time. God bless you. Thank you.